An Evening with the Sladdens, 1915. Part 2.
Jack wrote to his father on the 13th of June, describing a visit to Aunt George. She was Judith Sladden's aunt. She lived in the household of her cousin, Dr. William Grace, who was a famous cricketer, W.G. Grace.
My dear father, Kathleen and I cycled over to Mottingham this afternoon and saw Aunt George and Dr. and Mrs. Grace. Aunt George has been taking great interest in a canteen put up by the Army Temperance Association for the benefit of the soldiers in the district. It was opened the other day, and Aunt has undertaken to go there twice a week and once every 6 Sundays. The first day, she was there from 3 to 9, was on her feet most of the time and came back declaring that she was not tired. Mrs. Grace said that she could not have been unduly fatigued, for she ate a very good supper on her return. She really is extraordinary. I wonder how many old ladies of 84 could do half as much. Thank you for your parcel. The butter enclosed with the eggs was rather soft on arrival, but recovered to some extent after it had been put in a cool place. The Civil Service Rifles are having a strenuous recruiting campaign. They're raising a 3rd battalion. I understand recruits are coming along pretty well. They're not, of course, all civil servants, but I fancy most of the recruits are men of similar station in life. Just now, the organisation of munition workers seems to be even more important than raising men for the army. Love to all. I remain your affectionate son, John D. Sladden.
Mila, who was staying at Seawood House prior to starting at Bournebrook Military Hospital, wrote to Cyril.
My own dear Cyril, I gave them all a shock this morning by coming down in uniform. Mrs. Ashwin wants to see me in my bonnet and cloak. That's why I put it on. Your father thinks it is a good thing you are not here, as I look so severe you'd be frightened of me. Everyone else, however, likes me in it very much. By the way, dear, your father is very worried about this new taxation, more worried than he cares to show. He takes trouble awfully pluckily, but I'm afraid if this new taxation comes into force, as in suggested form, that he will be pretty hard hit. He has been busy brewing Friday, Saturday, and again today, so as to get as much done as possible before the new taxation comes into force. Your mother has just remarked that she must buy Eustace Miles's vegetarian cookery book now that meat is so expensive. Mr. Wheatley says he has to pay 1 shilling and threepence a pound for mutton when buying a whole sheep, so makes nothing, but rather loses when people complain it is dear at 1 shilling a pound. The Wilkins boys and others who have not volunteered are getting very agitated by the posters in the village. Compulsion is coming. George Crisp has been wounded. He is in the 4th Worcesters in the Dardanelles. Crisp heard from his son yesterday saying that he was quite well in himself, but was going to have his left forefinger, or rather what remains of it, amputated. I absolutely forbid the 9th Worcesters to go to the Dardanelles. Ever your own devoted, Mila.
But to the Dardanelles, Cyril was bound. He set sail from Avonmouth on the 24th of June, passing by Gibraltar.
My dear mother, we are on an old Union Castle liner, chiefly a cargo boat with very little passenger accommodation. The men are packed tight on the lower decks and the officers are like sardines in the few cabins available. There is not a lot of room to move as we have a fair lot of luggage with us. We have to get up and go to bed in relays. I've been sleeping up on deck ever since we started. It is very much more pleasant than down in our stuffy cabins. We are progressing in a very leisurely manner, as the boat is a slow one, and also we are avoiding beaten tracks. We had a treat on Tuesday morning, and I would not have missed it for a lot. The coast was beautiful in the early morning light, but the mountains were, of course, the part that struck us most. They are all so rugged and unusual in shape. It was difficult to realise all the time that we were passing one of the best-known spots on the earth. The men have had instructions to mention no names of places, so I am writing on the same principle, knowing you will have little difficulty in recognising all the places referred to, the more so because you know them all yourself. I look forward very much to getting letters again. It is one of the most unsatisfactory points about the journey that one has to go so long without any chance of hearing. Best luck to all from your affectionate son, Cyril E. Sladen.
The Dardanelles campaign took place on the Gallipoli Peninsula in the Ottoman Empire, modern-day Turkey, in an attempt by the Allied powers to control the sea route from Europe to Russia. Earlier in the year, the Allies had launched a naval attack, followed by an amphibious landing on the peninsula, with the aim of capturing Constantinople. Lack of sufficient intelligence and knowledge of the terrain, along with a fierce Turkish resistance, hampered the success of the invasion. In June 1914, reinforcements were sent out, which included the 9th Battalion of the Worcestershire Regiment.
My dear mother, we were glad to hear from your letter to Jack last week that you really intend coming up here on your way to Eastbourne and will probably be with us a fortnight hence. We are wondering if Cyril has really started yet for the Dardanelles. What an experience it will be for him, especially who has never been out of England at all. Poor old boy, I do hope he will come through all right. We may have rather more to put up with on his account from the distance and difficulty in getting news. I hope it may be a really successful operation. How delighted they will all be if it is and they really do win their way through. I'm glad the roses are so good this year and I wish I could come home for a peep at them. So, Father Lopez has joined the Church of Rome. From what I have heard of him, I am not in the least surprised. I do wonder what will happen next to the manor. Thank you very much for the gooseberries. We have had some, and Mrs. Horseman has bottled some. Much love to you all. Your affectionate daughter, Kathleen.
Kathleen referred to Father Lopez, who had bought Badsey Manor House 3 years earlier and converted it into a boys' home. Arthur wrote to Kathleen on the 4th of July.
My dear Kathleen, it was a great treat to have your nice long letter with real news in it, especially of the boys. I only get scanty news of them otherwise. I suppose Cyril is probably at Gallipoli now. I wish I'd been able to see him. My last sight of him was at Victoria Station last August when he came to see me off. How very mysterious all that campaign seems. I doubt if anyone can predict at all accurately how long it will take to get through. A sentence in Jack's letter seemed to me full of significance. Speaking of civil service men and enlistment, he said that the Somerset House people were not likely to let any more men go because it would necessitate employing women in the departments. Why not employ them? Really, some government departments are more strangled in precedent and prejudice than our employers. They ought to keep drafting in and training suitable women so as to effect the change as conveniently as possible. How little news I get from home. Never anything about Badsey soldiers. Whether war loan is being bought there at all well. I don't even know if the flower show is off this year, but I guess it is. Write again if you've time. With much love, your affectionate brother, Arthur.
In early July, Eugenie was visiting relatives. May wrote on the 7th of July to give her mother news of home, including information on the Belgium refugees in the village.
My dear mother, you begin to wonder when Ethel and I are going to write, but you know how the days slip by. Today, however, is rather an off day. We thought we should have to make cakes this afternoon, as the soldiers from Abbey Manor were to have come to tea tomorrow, but as the weather is so unsettled, we've put them off. So we've been doing raspberry vinegar instead. We picked the fruit yesterday after I got back. There are such a lot. and they take so long to pick. Wasn't it nice hearing from Cyril so soon? I wonder how far he is now. Evidently, the last letter was posted at Gibraltar. Mila wrote a card to say she too had heard on Monday morning and was delighted at getting a letter so soon. She was looking well on Sunday, had more colour than when she was at the General. It wasn't very fine for her, but she sat in the summer house and got all the air she could. She was very cheerful. Evidently, conditions for the nurses at Bournebrook are better than at the General. We had a Belgian committee meeting last night and decided that the Weyergaards must go. The man has refused to work since an incident last week. Mr. Alsbrook thought the man ought easily to get work in a munition factory and undertook to tell him we could not keep him more than a week or two. Then Ethel and I will have to see Mr. Bird before we get another family down. I hope he will go on letting us have the house. With much love to yourself, your loving daughter, May E. Sladden.
Julius spent a few days with his wife in Eastbourne and then returned to work, whilst Eugenie remained in Eastbourne. He wrote to Eugenie on his return.
My dearest wife, I will begin a letter to you while waiting for tea. Everything went well in our absence, and although the girls are busy, they make light of the work and say they are positively happy without a servant. The wounded soldiers had to put off their visit, as an inspection was on today. Now Monday has been fixed. Ethel has given great joy to old Musto and Elijah and his wife by asking them to come in and have tea with the men. The latter will like to see any man from the Dardanelles. The roses are still very beautiful and the garden generally in best form. The small fruit is most abundant and takes a lot of picking. We should be glad of plenty next Monday, and we think raspberries and cream may be popular. Wipers was very glad to see me and came with Ethel a little way to meet me on my return. There are some motor buses going through here. They turn from Evesham along the lane and through the village, past our station to Bidford, and return by the same route. There are two each way and one on Sundays, but they do not seem to run at very convenient times as far as we are concerned. Much love, dear, from us all, your affectionate husband, Julius Sladden.
73-year-old William Musto was a neighbour of the Sladdens, and Mr. and Mrs. Elijah Crisp ran the post office. Their son George Crisp had been wounded whilst in the Dardanelles. By the 11th of July, Cyril had landed at Moudros on the Greek island of Lemnos, though he was unable to reveal his destination.
My dear mother, we have, to all intents and purposes, finished our journey. We had rather a picturesque run here since we left on Thursday midday. The many islands we passed are fine rugged hills and look very fine through the haze, especially at morning and evening. We steamed into harbour just before breakfast today. It is much the finest natural harbour I have ever seen, with beautiful surrounding hills. It's large enough to hold all the navies in the world, I should think. Tomorrow we get into small ships to take us the short remaining distance necessary to bring us to our destination and then to work. So, in 24 hours, we may expect to be within artillery fire range. On Tuesday evening, I got on shore for some hours and spent a large part of the time in a most fascinating shop. The town was very eastern indeed, and interesting. It is a desperately dried up place, with scarcely any growth of any kind. If it is like that by the sea, one wonders what it must be like inland. Best luck to all from your affectionate son, Cyril E. Sladden.
On the 21st of July, Badsley Manor House was put up for auction. Julius wrote to tell Eugenie of the sale.
My dearest wife, last evening we went round the manor house and saw the furniture, a queer collection, containing some good things, but not many, that I would hanker after. The sale is at 2 p.m. today. There have been a lot of people looking round, and I hear various opinions are expressed as to the desirability of the place. I fancy they're not generally favourable, but some others take a different view. This afternoon, the girls went up to the Red Cross Tea and Fete at Abbey Manor. I contented myself with taking a ticket and sending up a few buttonhole roses for the flower stall. People were asked to bring things for sale, and the girls took some gooseberries and a pot of jam. Mila wrote that Sunday week would be her day off, but she thought she was too stony to come. However, the girls wrote that we would send her the fares. We're getting on quite comfortably, but she'll be glad to get you all back. Your affectionate husband, Julius Sladden.
Mila did indeed come to Badsley and wrote to Cyril about her visit and also told of her new life at Bournebrook Military Hospital.
My own dear Cyril, I was at Badsley yesterday. May met me at the station. They all had their pretty things on. Even your father had his long black coat on. He is well, but struck me as rather nervy. May and he seemed rather overstrung, and the former looked rather tired. I think she worries a good deal over the housekeeping, often quite unnecessarily, and combined with her schoolwork, this fags her out. Ethel read me many letters from the front in France and in the Dardanelles. She receives numbers and numbers, and if she keeps them all, will want a room in which to stack them. Last week we had a most exciting time when we were inspected by the King. We were not supposed to know he was coming, but the news had leaked out. We never saw such a scrubbing and a polishing everything had, including the patients. We were very busy in the operating theatres, getting in 15 cases before 1 o'clock, and then set to and cleared everything up, polished brasses, etc., etc., as though our lives depended on it. We had both theatres laid out as though ready for operating. We were well repaid for our efforts, because the King came right inside. Love from your very own, Mila.
On the 7th of August, Arthur, who was shortly to become a father, wrote to his father outlining his plans.
My dear father, since I last wrote, my plans have largely formed themselves. Later orders from the War Office showed several considerable disadvantages in temporarily withdrawing from the service. And as they are prepared to grant a reasonable leave, I have felt bound to sign on again for another year's general service. I hope to get an appointment as a pathologist soon, which would carry a small increase in pay, and a promotion to captain will also follow shortly. I must confess the great reason for carrying on is the feeling that they want, and will want, men. And at this juncture, to drop out would make me feel rather a rotter. It is a great disappointment to us both, but has to be faced, and my great hope is that the coming events will make it easier for Mary to face it. These are anxious days, and yet I feel less pessimistic than 4 months ago. I suppose national service is coming. I think that that could do more than anything to hearten most people. Have you any news of Badsley, lads? Have any more joined of late? I have come across a few of the Worcesters, but generally from the Birmingham area. I hope you'll be able to get the fruit in and dispose of it. With much love to all, your affectionate son, Arthur F.S. Sladden.
A new assault began in the Dardanelles on 6 August. British forces landed at Suvla Bay at Gallipoli, creating a third bridgehead that was designed to link up with the Anzacs. But each fresh attempt was defeated.
Cyril had experienced heavy fighting and wrote to his mother on the 12th of August.
My dear mother, Before you get this, the tale that the newspapers tell may have caused you anxiety on my account. The day before yesterday, we were strongly attacked at dawn in a very unpleasant position and had to pay a heavy price to hold our own, which, however, we managed to do. The fact that I remain as yet untouched is probably largely due to my having been on a special duty in the rear, and I only came up with reinforcements after the worst was over. It was a terrible day, such as our old campaigners will signal out as worse than most they have endured. I cannot write much description now, and don't know whether I shall ever want to do anything but forget much of what I saw. I had, I know not how many, of the narrowest escapes. One is too much occupied to notice, but all of us who have collided again can tell a similar tale. Since that evening, we have been resting, collecting, and reorganising ourselves. I have taken over the machine guns from Pearson, who is one of the other lucky ones, but is commanding a company now. I feel that after Tuesday, I have had enough of war to last any man for life. There are many who will experience it no more. Still, in a war like this, one must just go on. You will be glad to know that I am perfectly fit and well again. Write to Mila in case I don't get a letter through to her this time. I am uncertain about posts. Best love from Cyril. P.S. Spires of Hampton in my platoon was killed.
Just a few hours after writing this letter, Cyril was shot. A War Office telegram was received in Badsey on the 16th of August.
Regret to inform you that Lieutenant C.E. Sladden, 9th Worcestershire Regiment, was wounded 12th August. Any further details will be wired when received.
Fortunately, Cyril's wound was not too serious, and he was able to ride home a few days later from the ship Andana, a passenger ship which had been requisitioned as a troop ship.
My dear father, about midnight on Thursday, I got a bullet through my left shoulder. The wound is clean and the bullet has come out, and I don't think any bone was touched, so it is quite a minor affair. The official news of my wound will probably say nothing about severity or otherwise. I have just transferred to this ship from a regular hospital ship and cannot tell where I shall be taken. I am not bad enough for a trip home, I am afraid, although that is what I should like. I am quite comfortable and in very little pain, and able to get about gently. It is a tremendous relief to be out of it all for a bit, and to be clean and civilised. Write and tell Mila. Best love from your affectionate son, Cyril E. Sladden.
Meanwhile, at about the same time that Cyril was wounded, a new young Sladden entered the world. Arthur's wife Mary gave birth to a baby daughter, Dorothy Mary Sladden, on the 12th of August. Arthur wrote to tell his mother the news.
My dearest mother, no doubt you've received our happy news before I, for the telegram only reached me this evening, about 20 hours after my daughter was born. Hubert's wire stated that mother and daughter were doing well, and so I hope all is satisfactory. I'm so happy to know we have a child and you a granddaughter, and all I want now is to get back and see Mary and our baby. She is a very punctual arrival, I think. I'm very thankful that the long days of waiting are done. It has been a long and lonely time for Mary, I know. But she's been very brave and sensible throughout, and I trust that she is now able to realise to the full her happiness and mine. Good night, Mother dear. I hope that having a grandchild won't make you feel very old. As soon as possible, the baby must come and see you and her grandfather and her paternal aunts. With much love to you and father and all at home, from your son, Arthur.
George was delighted at the news of becoming an uncle and wrote on the 18th of August to his mother.
My dear little mother, If you're not puffed up beyond measure at being a grandmother, I'll swallow my bayonet and chew the scabbard. I myself feel that I occupy a more exalted position in the scheme of human affairs, since I have been called upon to fulfil the ancient immemorial office of uncle. It's like receiving an additional stripe of acting rank, unpaid. I suppose you and the girls would have been slightly more pleased if the new recruit had been a boy. There I score over you, for I think little girls are much nicer. Big ones too. Anyway, I'm vastly glad, and I hope a paternal government will let Arthur go and see his firstborn without any delay. The greatest relief we enjoy here is almost entire, that is to say, comparative, absence of flies. Nearer to the trenches, they increase progressively in number as one approaches. I sympathise greatly with Cyril, for I suppose the Dardanelles flies outvie ours completely. I hope the fruiting goes on well. It's a big job for the girls, as the crop is heavy. Good sound war work, though. Love to all, from your affectionate son, George.
On the 16th of August, Mila received the news she did not want to hear.
My own dear one, when I came over to tea this afternoon, there was a letter waiting for me from your mother, telling me she had received a wire from the War Office saying you had been wounded on August 12th, but giving no particulars. Darling, I can hardly realise it. My great big sweetheart maimed is almost incredible. I wish I could be with you, just to help look after you. I wish the War Office could give particulars when they wire, just to say whether the wound is serious or slight. It is so wearing waiting to hear. I hope, dearest, that you are in a hospital, well looked after. I know that you will do your best to get well, for my sake as well as your own. God bless you, my own brave man. Remember, I love you even more as you are now, even if it is possible for my love to become greater. Good night, beloved. Your own devoted, Mila.
Cyril spent several days at sea before arriving in Malta, where he was admitted to the Blue Sisters Hospital. He was able to write in more detail of his wound.
My dear mother, you will by now have got my cable, which may very likely be the first news you have had of my getting wounded. My bullet was obtained late on the night of the 12th, after an unsuccessful attempt to attack a position reputed to be lightly held, but unfortunately rather more strongly held than we had been led to suppose. The ground was quite new to us, and we had been sent there that evening to carry out this particular job, which turned out rather disastrous, as all the remaining officers of the regiment were knocked out, and a good many men. I was retiring up a hill with a small party of men and a couple of wounded who required assistance, with only a little firing going on, when a random bullet caught me just behind the left shoulder blade and came out at the end of the shoulder. The shoulder has been bruised and stiff, but it is easing already. But right down to the elbow, my arm is brilliantly coloured in many hues and looks quite alarming, but is perfectly harmless. It was several miles from the place where I was wounded to the landing stage where I embarked for the hospital ship, and I covered the distance walking in several stages, broken by prolonged halts at three different dressing stations on the way. I got on board about 9 or 10 o'clock on the Friday morning, having only what I wore on me, and of that I discarded the shirt and jacket, which had been cut about past all hope, and were very filthy and covered with blood. So I have lived since in pyjamas, and only today have seen a tailor and ordered some more clothes. Best love to all from your most affectionate son, Cyril E. Sladden.
Eugenie wrote to Cyril on the 24th of August.
My very dear Cyril, it was a great relief to hear that you are at Malta and getting on well. When we look at the casualty lists and see how your battalion has suffered, we feel most thankful that your life has been spared. But I fear you must have gone through a terrible time the few days before you were wounded. When we look at the photograph of your fellow officers and think what another of them have been killed or injured, it makes me feel very sad. Mila has been splendid, so brave and hopeful. She was very pleased to have May and Kath over one day last week, and she will be coming to us for next Sunday, which is her day off. We have had heaps of letters of sympathy about you and many kind messages to you. Jack and the girls are very busy with the plums. They're a tremendous crop. And there are heaps of apples and pears too. How are you off for paper or books in hospital? Would you like some sent? Now, dear Boo, I must end. You have many prayers for your recovery and future safety. Very much love, dear, from your very loving mother, Eugenie N. Sladden.
Cyril was past fit to leave Malta, which he did on the 8th of September, bound for Alexandria. A week later found him still at sea.
My dear mother, quite a remarkable effort on the part of authorities finds me still on the high seas, expecting to reach Alexandria tonight. After we got on board at Malta, some men were sent on who were required to go to Lemnos at once, so our orders were changed on their behalf. However, there are presumably no proper facilities there for dealing with men returning from hospital, so the rest of us were left on board and are now on our way back to Alexandria. I've quite enjoyed my trip on this boat, which is very comfortable and provides an awfully good little library, so that I have read a lot and the time passes quickly. The chief thing that worries me is that I am completely and utterly out of condition and don't see any likelihood of breaking myself in gently to hard conditions again. I will add any further information before I post this in Alexandria, September 16th. I am spending tonight in a hotel, as the authorities can find nothing better than bare sand and a tent, and I have no valise. Tomorrow morning I see a doctor and shall know what will be done with me. I may return at once if fit, as I believe a party goes tomorrow. Best love to all from your affectionate son, Cyril E. Sladden.
An Evening with the Sladdens, 1915, Part 2. The cast was Julius, Anthony Miller, Eugenie, Patsy Miller, Jack, Tony Spinks, May and Ethel, Jane Neal, Kathleen, Sandra Sparrow, Arthur, Chris Smith, George, Robin Neal, Cyril, Terry Sparrow, Juliet, Martha Murray, Mila, Bella Richards. The narrator was Will Dallimore, and the official voice Valerie McGann. The director was Maureen Spinks. An Evening with the Sladdens was a Badsy Society production.